Email todayradio@rte.ie.
Some of your texts to 51551 in relation to banking and lending and all of that. One person says, I was financially ruined after 2009 due to the financial crash. I was a small builder, 4 employees. I've worked incredibly hard since and built up my business again to 5 employees without being able to borrow a cent because of my pre-2009 record. I have a perfect banking and income record since, but I'm still judged by my pre-2009 record when it comes to looking for any credit, even a miserably temporary overdraft of 3,000, and that comes from a builder in Wicklow. While another person says, we all know there are absolutely no guarantees in this life about anything, and that includes employment prospects. With Ireland's recent history in this area, surely reckless lending by banks is the one thing that we should steer well clear of. Well, you can keep your text coming to 51551. You can tweet us at Today Radio RTE. Now, today the Ambassador Nicholas Burns is the, sorry, not today, but Ambassador Nicholas Burns is the former US Undersecretary of State, the US Ambassador to NATO, and now Foreign Policy Advisor to the presumed Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. And today the Ambassador is a guest speaker at global law firm DLA Piper, where during a video conference he will be discussing the impact of the COVID-19 crisis on the global economy as well as US relations with Ireland. And he joins me now on the line. Ambassador Burns, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sarah.
Thank
you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Can I ask you first what you've made of the world's handling of the global 19 pandemic?
I don't think there's been sufficient global coordination. Obviously, every country has to focus inward first on their own people, their own hospitals. That just makes sense. But there's a lot that the countries of the world could have done in terms of looking, coordinating on a search for a vaccine. For instance, if a vaccine is found, how is it going to be distributed equitably? 7.7 billion people in 195 nation states. And we've seen very little of that kind of coordination that we would have expected. The United Nations could have been the place, or the World Health Organization, but of course the U.S. has pulled out of that organization. The G20, the 20 largest economies, could have been the place for that. During the economic crisis of 2008-09, there was very good coordination, not so much now, mainly because the United States and China are competing as to who caused the crisis and who might emerge stronger.
You mentioned the World Health Organization as being one of the organizations that could have coordinated all that. And yet, President Donald Trump has raised concerns in relation to all of that, the World Health Organization and its handling of the pandemic. Would you share those concerns at all?
I share some of the concerns, but I think what he did was not correct. There's a lot of evidence that the World Health Organization in early January, when the virus was profound in Wuhan in China, effectively covered up for the Chinese, didn't ask tough questions. So the rest of the world, particularly Asia and Europe, which was next as the pandemic hit, was unaware of the severity of the crisis in Wuhan, and the Chinese government withheld information. So I think you've got to ask tough questions. And if an institution like the World Health Organization is not performing well, then the nations of the world have to get together to make reforms. But you don't do that in the middle of a pandemic. It's like withdrawing funding for the fire department in the middle of the fire. I mean, a lot of countries, poorer countries of the world, depend on the World Health Organization for information, for advice, and actually for financial support. Not so much Ireland, which, of course, is working within the EU or the United States. So I think it was a mistake for President Trump to defund it, to take American funds out, and to take the United States out of the organization altogether. It's the central organizing body for this pandemic, which, as you know, is not over.
Mm. And do you think the way President Trump has handled this on the global stage has hurt the perception of the U.S. as a global leader?
I do. I think the president is our president is conveying that he wants to go it alone, that he doesn't want to cooperate. He's particularly competitive with the European Union, which I find strange. The EU has always been a great partner of the United States. It's our leading economic partner and trade partner right now. The leading investor in our economy are the EU countries, your country and others. And for the president to somehow set up a situation where the EU is the competitor and at fault, I think it's just it's ineffective diplomatically. It's hurting us and it's hurting our image if you look at public opinion polls around the world.
And yet, is it, do you think, Nicholas, what many in America, the American public, want? You know, this message of America first, the isolationist policies, all of that sort of protectionism. That's what people wanted when they voted for America first, isn't it?
Well, you have to remember he was elected by the minority of the people, and he actually didn't receive as many votes as Hillary Clinton. A minority of people may want that, but our public opinion polls show very consistently over the last several years, a majority of Americans know who our friends are. They know that we have to have close relations with Europe, as well as with Canada, that we're closely tied to some of our allies in East Asia, that we have to be part of the world, part of the climate change agreement. The United States has withdrawn from that under President Trump's leadership. So he's actually acting inconsistent with majority views in all of our polls.
So with the US maybe leaving somewhat of a vacuum at a global level in terms of leadership, does that leave the way open for China to take its place?
It does. I think it does. China is a very powerful country, of course, but it's not trusted. Not trusted by a lot of countries because of what it's done in Hong Kong. It's now passed legislation that would effectively cancel the democratic rights of the people of Hong Kong, not when the Chinese are putting 1 million Uyghurs in Western China into so-called re-education camps. And so I do think it puts a lot of pressure on the European Union, which is a very strong group of countries, to be that democratic voice in the world. But it's a strange thing indeed when the United States pulls out of that type of the type of leadership that has consistently been ours for the last several decades.
So in terms of a global recovery plan then from COVID-19, you're quoted as saying when the US opts out, it makes it very difficult for the rest of the world to be effective. So how difficult do you see a recovery plan globally?
Well, for the economic recovery, this is a great concern here in the United States. We have the highest unemployment since 1933. All the world is being hit by that. And what needs is that the larger economies need to get together to align our fiscal and monetary policies, to coordinate globally. We're seeing a bit of that from the central banks. I think Christine Lagarde of the European Central Bank has done very well to engage with her American counterparts. We're not seeing it from Xi Jinping, Donald Trump, some of the national leaders. That's what has to happen next, because we're all in this together. And if 2008-09 is precedent, this recession looks to be much deeper. The EU is going to contract by 7 to 8%, the EU economy, the US economy by a similar measure. We haven't seen these kind of contractions in global economic activity since the 1930s. So we've got to pull together on one oar.
Yeah, but there's no sign of President Trump doing that, is there? So what happens if he doesn't?
Well, we need to vote him out of office on November 3rd here in the United States. I think that's the answer. Our country's at a
what I suppose what I'm wondering is what damage crossroads could be done in the meantime, because that's a while away yet.
It's a while away. You're right. Well, the damage that can be done is that we're not going to see the kind of policies put in place that could lead to a quicker recovery. This economic crisis is surely going to last into 2021, if not well beyond. And so it's very important that especially the G20 countries, the 20 largest economies, begin to align their policies more closely together.
In terms of that global recession that you're talking about, what impact do you reckon that crisis might have on the trade relationship between Ireland and the US?
You know, I think trade is going to be a difficult issue for the Americans for the next couple of months before our election. I don't expect that there'll be any major trade agreements made. There's just too little time because in our system, the president, of course, has the right to negotiate them, but the Congress has the right to ratify them. And so I don't think we'll see major action until 2021. And it's very likely that Donald Trump has a very different view of trade. He is of course, rejected the idea of a U.S.-European trade agreement that President Obama had been working on before he left office. He rejected President Trump, this notion of a big Trans-Pacific partnership in the Indo-Pacific, a major trade agreement with 12 countries. He wants to go it alone. And I think that's going to be one of the major issues that is going to be at the forefront of our election on November 3rd. And whether or not we change, even with a Joe Biden victory, will depend, of course, on the constitution of our Congress, whether it's Republican-dominated or Democratic-dominated. So it's a highly contested, highly argued issue here.
Can I ask you then, Nicholas, about the recent unrest in the United States following the killing of George Floyd by police in Minneapolis and obviously the Black Lives Matter protests which followed all around the United States? And I know that you're quoted that saying, while millions of Americans were trying to protest peacefully, your president treated them like terrorists.
He did. He's taken a law and order approach. He thinks that political protests, which in our country are guaranteed by the First Amendment to our Constitution, is the right of people to protest. He brands these people terrorists. And what's been remarkable, there was some looting and violence at the very beginning of the protests after George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis. But we've had millions of people on the streets of every major city, of many small towns, and they've been peaceful protests. And so for the president somehow to say that these are violent, they're terrorists, they should be put down,
well,
is entirely wrong.
Some of them were, though, weren't they? Some of them were violent. And, you know, there's more than a bit of looting. You know, we saw many images here of buildings on fire and plenty of looting.
Yes, sir, I said that. At the beginning, in the immediate days following the murder of George Floyd, there was widespread looting in Minneapolis where he was murdered, and in some of the other major cities of the country. But since then, this is a month away now, since then, we've had a series of constant daily protests, almost all peaceful, and the president has mischaracterized them. And he's also someone who is dividing us by race. Race has, you know, bedeviled the United States for 400 years. We've never gotten it right. We've never treated the African Americans equitably. And it's now become the dominant issue, along with the coronavirus and the economic crisis in the United States, and it will be for our election. And the difference between Joe Biden, who does support Black Lives Matter, who does want to see racial justice, and Donald Trump, who is really representing a very narrow set of people who frankly want white majority, white rule in the United States, white domination. I think this will now become probably the central issue that's going to be argued here.
And as I mentioned earlier, you are a foreign policy advisor to the Biden campaign. How close do you think it's going to be?
It's hard to say. I'm one of many people advising Vice President Biden. We've had a series of very close elections in 2016 and again in 2004 and 2000. And I expect it may be the same now. Vice President Biden has a commanding lead, but we're 4 months away. And you learn in politics not to count your chickens before they hatch. And so I think, you know, those of us who support him are just trying to make sure the people are registered to vote. People have access to vote, which is going to be another issue in our country, because Republicans tend to shut down polling stations in places, in cities where Democrats are in the majority. That's another big issue here, the right to vote and to vote freely.
Just finally then, Nicholas, in his memoir, Obama's Defense Secretary Robert Gates said of Joe Biden that he's a man of integrity. Still, I think he's been wrong on nearly every major foreign policy and national security issue over the past four decades. What do you make of that?
Well, I have great respect for Secretary Gates, but I disagree with him on this one. I know Vice President Biden well. He's been right about a lot of issues as well. He knows a lot about foreign policy and national security. He chaired our Senate Foreign Relations Committee for many years. He's one of our knowledge experts. I think that's one of the strengths he'll bring to the White House if he's elected in November.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me this morning. That's Ambassador Nicholas Burns, former U.S. Undersecretary of State and U.S. Ambassador to NATO, and also, as I said, foreign policy advisor to Joe Biden. Thank you very much for joining us, Nicholas.